A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 285. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Late Night Story, featuring Tom Baker. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, this one is a slight oddity in the canon of British genre television that we've set ourselves, Brian. We're talking about 4 15-minute stories read by Tom Baker that ran, as the title would suggest, late night on BBC Two over Christmas 1978. They would almost qualify for Christmas ghost stories. They're not quite ghost stories, as we'll hear, but it's an interesting stuff, isn't it? 4 stories that appeared.
That's right, and there's actually a 5th story that we'll include as well. That was not broadcast at the time, but was recorded at the time with the others and survives in the archives. So we've been able to watch that as well. And it has some interesting, well-known authors involved and makes some interesting choices. This was something that we heard referenced in the 1970s volume of a book called Scarred for Life.
Yes, you may have heard us refer to this book before. This is a book by Stephen Brotherston and Dave Lawrence. It's the first volume of at least, I think, a 2-volume series where they're talking about or writing about the TV and film and books and comics and those chilling public information films that so scared us in the 70s and 80s. And the 70s volume is out, and you can find more details of how to get it on lulu.com, and it features quite a number of the shows of the 70s that we've covered, Brian, and it did reference this little oddity that Tom Baker did in 1978.
Yeah, so thanks to them for catching this and highlighting it for us.
Absolutely. So let's get into the format. We should say it is extremely simple but rather effective in the way they've done it. Obviously, we've got Tom Baker, possibly at the height of his popularity then as the 4th Doctor. So this is during his reign as the 4th Doctor. And it's all done in a very sort of traditional storytelling fashion. He sits in what looks like an ordinary study with books and various odd bits and pieces and a desk.
That's right. And he looks directly at the camera and reads or recites this short story for us.
Like I say, it could not be much more simple or direct in the way they film this. It is just literally Tom Baker telling us a story straight down the camera.
Yeah, and each story is about 15 minutes long. So they're just these little late night stories they would put at the end of the broadcast day. And the common theme for these 5 is they're all sort of macabre tales about childhood, about children or about looking back at childhood.
Yes, creepy stories about kids, either in creepy situations or being fairly creepy themselves.
They are very creepy indeed.
So we're going to cover all 5 of the stories. As we've said, they are fairly short, so there isn't a great deal of detail to pick out from them, particularly as we want to avoid spoilers, because I think all of the stories do have a, let's say, a twist or a punch in the final sort of part. Let us begin with a story that was the first one to be broadcast, The Photograph by Nigel Neal. Now, there you are. Straight away, you can see why we were interested in these stories, or another reason why we're interested in these stories. Of course, Nigel Neal, one of the greatest British television writers. We know him for Quatermass, Beasts, his adaptation of 1984, The Stone Tape, and many more. And here we are, the first stories by him, although, as we'll discuss in a moment, it wasn't intended to be the first story. But that's how it ended up. And we start with a boy who's very ill in bed. In fact, it's pretty, I think, clear that he's in his deathbed. And his mother is very keen to get a photograph of him and to take him to a photographer's studio so that she will have some sort of lasting memory of him. And I have to say, it's, you know, it's slightly uncomfortable, this story, as many of these are, about an ill child and adults who relate to them in certain ways and maybe rather strict. So it's an interesting starter, Brian.
It's definitely uncomfortable, and it has this idea that his mother is really insisting on this photograph, and it's made very clear that she's almost more interested in the photograph itself rather than her son's own well-being, because she has sort of accepted that he will not live much longer. And we get this idea, the child's sort of dismay at seeing this image of himself and his discomfort at the whole process of going and having this photograph taken and then at seeing it. And then, of course, the types of stories these are, there is a power to the photograph itself.
Yes, and as I say, we can't really reveal the twist and the ending, but Nigel Neal, first story, the photograph. And as you say, Brian, it gives us this sort of running theme of childhood and things being slightly out of kilter. Quite often we've got rather sickly children at the sort of heart of the story. I can sort of see why the producers have grouped these stories together, or how they've chosen them anyway.
And they also tend to have a bit of an archaic feel. These tend to feel like they're stories of early 20th century children or perhaps Victorian era. There is often a feel that it's sort of something being told from another time.
Yes, that's a good point, actually. These are, as you say, stories from the earlier part of the 20th century, and that's how they feel, yeah.
The Emissary by Ray Bradbury, who was a very highly acclaimed American science fiction author of many novels and short stories, describes in this story another young boy who was also confined to his sick bed. And in this case, the link to the outside world is his pet dog, who brings back smells of the outside world on his fur, or maybe even little bits and pieces of debris. But it's the outside world being brought back by this dog for the sick child to perceive.
Yes, and I mean, if you're familiar with Bradbury's writing, you'll notice that's often a thing with him, about, you know, the smells and the feelings and the temperatures and the experience of being out of doors, which of course is denied to this boy, but he lives it sort of vicariously through his dog. And he has a favourite school teacher who we learn tragically dies. And it leads this poor young boy lying in bed, hopefully recovering from whatever illness he has. He starts to sort of muse upon death and what might happen if he were to perish and so on. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a Ray Bradbury sort of horror story or macabre story if it didn't involve Halloween in some at some point. And there is indeed Halloween, when the dog starts to act strangely and then returns, as Bradbury says, smelling of graveyard soil. And of course, the question is, what else has the dog brought back? So we won't go into it too much. But, you know, you're beginning to see that these are genuinely creepy stories about that sort of sense of danger and terror for young children.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And they're stories that sort of give you these interesting and macabre sort of ideas in a very compact way. As we said, these are only 15-minute time slots.
Yeah, absolutely. So the third of the stories we're going to cover, which will do us for our first episode, is called Nursery Tea, written by Mary Danby. Now, that is the one name out of the five writers who may not be instantly recognisable to you. But if I was to say that she was the editor and contributor to numerous horror and ghost story collections from the 70s and 80s, and in particular that she edited the Fontana Book of Horror, which I know myself and my sort of fellow classmates used to gobble up back in the 70s when we wanted to get some horrific short tales. And her story, Nursery Tea, comes from one of those collections, and it describes two children this time, Olivia and Hugh, whose childhood was marred by the cruel treatment they received from their nanny. But of course, things have progressed a little bit.
Yes, in the story, they're actually adults now and have the opportunity to invite their nanny, who is now quite elderly, over for this small, for this little event. And it sort of turns to their revenge, inflicting some of the punishments that she had inflicted on them, turning them around onto her. And some of the things that are described and that they do are actually quite nasty. And of course, being the type of story this is, that isn't the end of things, and things go rather beyond that and become unpleasant for everyone involved.
Yes, I mean, if you haven't got the idea already, although these stories are about children and childhood, they're very definitely not stories for children, despite the comforting presence of Tom Baker with his, his dark curly-haired phase. So, yes, they were obviously late night stories.
Yes, very much so.
So after having dealt with the first three, let's get to our production notes. We have to say there's not many notes we've been able to find about this series. We do know that Late Night Story was directed and produced for the BBC by Tony Harrison. And his idea was to deliver 10 stories.
That's right, starting with these five sort of grisly tales of childhood read by Tom Baker. And they would be followed up by five war stories read by Sir John Mills, who we remember for playing Quatermass, but a well-known, very well-known and very good actor there, of course.
Yes. Listeners who've been on the Facebook page recently may have seen I tweeted or I posted a picture of a biography of Nigel Neal that I picked up in our local bookshop. And that has a picture of John Mills or Sir John Mills as Quatermass on the front cover. So, yes, we've added another Quatermass to our collection, Brian.
Yes, that's right. The Tom Baker episodes were scheduled to run from December 22nd of 1978.
And they would go out as the last programme of the night on BBC Two. Listeners, can you remember when television used to close down at night? So they would be, I've looked in that invaluable resource, the Radio Times Genome, where you can find actual listings from the Radio Times, and they would usually be at about midnight or just before or just afterwards when they were broadcast. So yes, again, these are midnight stories, and they would be the last thing on BBC Two.
Did the BBC broadcast the national anthem at the end of the broadcast day in that era?
That's a good question. I suspect they did still in the 1970s, because I can certainly remember the national anthem being the last thing on television when it closed down around midnight. So I suspect probably they did still broadcast the national anthem somewhere around midnight as TV closed down for the night.
I remember American cable stations doing that. In particular, PBS would, some PBS stations would show a Doctor Who serial edited into one long movie format at the end of the broadcast day, and it would be followed by the American National Anthem.
Ah, right. Okay. Now, we've hinted repeatedly at a fifth story that survives in the archive but was never broadcast. It was to be the first broadcast, which was, as you say, Brian, due to be December 22nd, 1978. And this was the story Shredni Vashtar by Saki, which we'll be talking about in our next episode. But there was a strike, a production or a broadcast strike. Remember those as well, listeners? So that episode was never broadcast, and they just went on. I presume BBC Two closed down for the night because of the strike. And so the next night we started with the photograph by Nigel Neal.
Yeah, so we missed one night and one story, and the following day, yeah, it picked up where it had been planned to be at that point. The production is very simple. We open seeing this quite simple and sort of classic style study with Tom Baker in a chair at a desk. And we have no spoken introduction. We very quickly go straight to a close-up and Tom Baker reading us this story.
Yeah, and it's, he literally turns to the camera and turns away from his desk and faces us and straight into it. No intros, no title, just starts the story. It's great stuff.
Yeah, and as we've mentioned, it's 15 minutes, so they don't have the time to use on many other elements. What they did have as another element is an opening title sequence, which is quite sinister and sort of brings us into the type of world that they're describing. And I found it rather disturbing, actually.
I think it's meant to disturb us, Brian, and it works. Again, you know, people will know that I do like a title sequence, and this one's a cracker. We have some sepia illustrations. Again, it's very simply done. Some sepia illustrations. A teddy bear looks out at us with a human eye while this bear sits on a mantelpiece. The camera pulls back to reveal the back of a small child, or it looks to be a small girl, and the child turns to face us and reveals her eyes and mouth sewn shut. Now, even talking about it, so it gives me shivers. In a moment, we're going to tell you how you can watch at least one of these episodes on YouTube. And if you do nothing else, go and watch just the first 30 seconds. All the while a music box, like a child's music box, slowly chimes. It's terrific in terms of a chilling and disturbing opening for these stories, Brian.
Yeah, it is very simple. It's basically a few sort of line drawing illustrations. And I wasn't even certain if we were looking at a small girl or a doll of a small girl. It had sort of a bit of that sense to me as well, but it's a simple enough drawing that it was not clear, I think.
Yes. Yes, you're quite right. It could be a doll, yes, with a disturbing face. It has been suggested, again, this is just opinion rather than fact, but it has been suggested that the series was somewhat of a riposte to that famous or infamous figure, Mary Whitehouse, and her National Viewers and Listeners Association, about her complaints about the horror and violence of Doctor Who episodes. Whether that's true or not, we've no way of knowing. But, of course, this was an interesting time for Doctor Who and its relation to viewer complaints, I guess, Brian.
Yes, that had been building over the course of a number of years. A couple of years earlier was the drowning sequence in The Deadly Assassin, the Doctor drowning, particularly at the end of an episode. That was an episode cliffhanger, and it was sort of the peak of the complaints about violent and disturbing imagery in Doctor Who in the 1970s, I think. And it was not much later with the Graham Williams years that they sort of pulled back from that. But this does sort of fit into, you know, doing some of those disturbing types of things that had been complained about by Mary Whitehouse and others. And it was certainly not limited to Doctor Who. It was spread across all sorts of programs.
Sure. But I think we've probably, all of us have may at one time or other have heard members of the production team from the 70s saying that if they didn't get a letter from Mary Whitehouse, that they felt they weren't doing their job on Doctor Who.
Yes, that was mentioned a number of times, covering much of the 70s, I think.
Yeah. So hopefully, anyway, we've piqued your interest about these stories told to us by Tom Baker. And of course, if we have, let's tell you how you can watch them yourselves. So we get to availability, Brian.
Yes, and it's a little bit different from our usual distribution that we talk about. All five Tom Baker episodes of Late Night Story are included as DVD extras on the DVDs for The Armageddon Factor, the Tom Baker Doctor Who story. And in fact, the easiest place to find that is it's part of the Doctor Who The Key to Time box set.
Yes, that's the one you want. The Key to Time box set, which I picked up here in Region 2 from Amazon for about £27 for the complete box set. And as you say, you pull out the Armageddon Factor disc, and in the extras, buried away way down the list of extras below various interviews on Pebble Mill at 1 and so on, you will find these five late night stories with Tom Baker.
That's right. And there is a Region 1 release that does the same sort of thing. Last I checked, it was running about $70 on Amazon.com, but $45 on Amazon.ca. So as you look at the different Amazon sites and different used marketplaces, you certainly may find deals on either The Key to Time or possibly just The Armageddon Factor. And if you're doing that in Region 1, make sure you get the Special Collector's Edition, because there was an earlier edition of The Key to Time that did not have any extras, so would not give you this. And of course, you get The Key to Time as well, which is a complete season of Doctor Who from the 1970s, and a very enjoyable one to watch as well.
Okay. Now, I'm guessing, you know, many of our listeners may have that Key to Time box set already. And if so, pull it down off the shelf and dig out the Armageddon Factor discs to find the extras, because you'll find these little gems hidden away on there. Unfortunately, it's, you know, it is possibly, as a new purchase, slightly expensive for 5-15 minute stories. We should say that the unbroadcast episode Shredni Vashtar is currently up on YouTube, so you can get a taster for what of the style of these broadcasts and see that complete story told by Tom Baker. And it will also let you watch those particularly chilling title sequence that we've mentioned. So great stuff there. You know, obviously we have problems with YouTube, but at least one episode is there for you to sort of wet your whistle.
Yes, that's right. So next time we will discuss the other two episodes that we haven't detailed yet, one of which was broadcast and one was the unbroadcast episode.
Yes, we'll talk about Tom Baker as a storyteller and perhaps reference a couple of other times he showed up on British television as a storyteller. And we'll just sort of get into some discussion about the merits of these particular stories and the way he tells them.
Absolutely. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group. And we have lots of interesting discussions going on there. So please join us if you can.
Yes, and of course, if you're into interesting shows about genre television or films or gaming, then why not drop by the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com. British Invaders is a proud member. We go out Mondays and Tuesdays, but of course they have several other shows going out throughout the week. You may find something there to pique your interest as well.
Very good. So until then, thank you for joining us, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.